Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Windswept by Adam Rakunas, narrated by Nanette Savard, with performances by Ken Jackson, Nora Ashradi, Lise Bruneau, Christopher Graybill, Steve Wanall, Lily Beacon, Helen Pafumi, Danny Stoller, Todd Schofield, Amanda Forstrom, Kimberly Gilbert, Yasmin Twazon, Stephen Carpenter, Eleanor Todd, Dawn Ursula, Peter Holdway, Christopher Walker, Lolita Horn, Elizabeth Jernigan, Colleen Delaney, Drew Copus, Tui T. Pham, Richard Rowan, Bradley Smith, and Scott McCormick. Book 2, Like a Boss.
I was sitting in my usual spot at Big Lily's, taking a sip of heavy mint tea when I got a call. The words, "the real job," floated in front of my eyes.
Ugh.
That this happened on my one day off from the waterworks meant one thing. Something had gone wrong at the old windswept distillery. My distillery. I took the call. It was my foreman, Marolo. What's up?
Bearings.
Well, I'm looking out toward the lifter, so I guess it's due west.
Ha and ha. You know which ones I mean.
I wish I didn't. Didn't we just clean the press last week?
Indeed we did. Now we have to do it again.
Then get to doing.
It's a little more complicated than that.
I seem to recall paying you an exorbitant sum so I didn't have to worry about complications.
And yet here we are.
What exactly is the problem, Marolo?
I think it's best for you to come out here and see it.
Jesus, really? This is the first night in months I get to enjoy my cushy life as a distiller. I was going to get dinner, go to Novice Theater to see this monologist perform, pick up strange and exotic men.
Since when do you go to monologues?
Where else do you think I find strange and exotic men? Marolo must have been shifting the old hardline phone from one ear to the other. Oh, my kingdom for a planet full of pied-up people, just to make the business calls go faster.
I am sorry to call you, Padma, but I really think it would be a good idea to come down tonight. Especially if you want this batch to get pressed on time.
We're ahead of schedule.
We are now, but we won't be for long.
Why not?
Come and see.
What? It's too late in the day to use your words?
Look, this is one of those things that's above my pay grade. You're the owner.
Ugh. "You're the owner" was the time-honored euphemism for "your employees are pissed." Of course, Marolo couldn't talk over the phone. Not when the people who worked for me were gathered around listening to his end of the conversation. Or both ends. That was the thing with hard lines. They could be easily spliced. With a pie call, no one could listen in unless they were great at decryption, breaking the law, or both. I blinked up the time, 3:46 in the afternoon. The distillery was too far for a bike ride, but I could catch the red bus in 20 minutes and still make it there and back in time for 6 o'clock. Okay, I'll catch the next bus and be there in an hour. Can you hold everything together that long?
That I can manage.
I killed the call. So, there was a crisis important enough for me to haul off to the far northern edge of Santee City, but not so important that I could take the time to use public transportation. What the hell was going on?
Whatever it is, you'll probably make it worse.
I took one more hit of the afternoon air, deep enough to banish the fear to its hidey hole in the back of my brain, and returned to the bar. Big Lily had just set down a plate of steaming kumara cakes, which she picked back up when she saw the look on my face.
I'll pack these to go.
She got a tiffin box from under the bar and upended the plate of kumara cakes into it. Thanks. This is not how today was supposed to work.
Trouble down at the mill?
I'm not so naive to think that life was going to be peaches and curry after I retired. But it would be nice if I could just enjoy owning the distillery, you know?
You have a funny definition of retired.
At least I'm not sitting around listening to people complain about their jobs all day.
I fail to see how cleaning the mains counts as not working.
until I can convince someone to give me a giant pile of money or a better gig, cleaning the mains is all I can do.
I still think you should have fought that judgment. Leaving you on the hook for the lifter reconstruction was wrong.
I couldn't afford to fight. That and most of the lawyers in town didn't want to do business with the woman who blew up the lifter.
What about the donations?
Poured them all into the distillery. I needed the funds to keep the place running.
You know, you could always sell out.
What? And give up my sole source of economic empowerment?
Then you could leverage that place, scale up production, be the biggest rum producer on Santee.
And if I thought it would make a dent in my debt, I would. But it can't, so I won't.
Just think about it, okay? I'd hate to see you spend the rest of your life slaving away in Bloom Beck's old slot. Getting out of that job is worth another appeal.
Thanks. I blinked in payment for my tab. Big Lily didn't try to rebuff me, though it would have been nice if she had. A night on the town wouldn't have sunk me too much, but I could feel the pressure of bills piling up, payroll especially. Today's issue would probably demand a little more of that cash. I stepped out onto Mercer Boulevard. The place felt dead, but I knew every bistro, bar, and bounce house was gearing up for the evening crowd. In 3 hours, this place would be packed with people reuniting after their shifts, looking to see their children, their lovers, their debtors. My neighborhood would jump back to life, and I would be counting down the minutes until 6 o'clock. Oh, 6 o'clock. Quitting time for some people, the start of a shift for others. And the only thing that had kept my brain from falling apart for the past 14 years. I had lost track of how many meetings, riots, and dinner dates I had had to cancel in order to make 6 o'clock. Most of my friends just accepted it, though a few made a point of mocking me, saying I was leading a double life as a crime fighter and or ghost agent for the Big Three. I wondered how disappointed they would be if they found out what I really did at 6 o'clock. I sat down and sipped a finger of old windswept single-batch rum. I rounded the corner onto Beta Street, where the Red Line bus stop squatted between a strip club and a library. The bus system had started a year ago. A few breeches had come shimmying down the cable in a loaded cargo can hiding among the flat-packed buses. Rather than give the parts back, the union confiscated and built them out. Hacking the control software turned out to be a pain, leading to the occasional bus stopping dead in its tracks. Still, it meant more people could get to and from the campong, and it was cheaper for me than hiring a tuk-tuk, even though Jilly's company still cut me the friends and family rate. The Red Line went all the way from Brushhead to Tonkay, the ward on the far edge of town, where the late Estella Tongao had set up the old windswept distillery. She had been able to cruise there and back in an armored limousine. I had to settle for the bus. Though, as I approached the stop, I might not have been able to settle even for that. The stop was little more than a cane-plast box surrounding a pair of benches. 3 sunburned people in ragged clothes snoozed on the benches, their bags at their feet. A scrawled sign glued to the side of the shelter said, "No service today, due to." The rest of the sign had been torn away, and the greasy fingerprints on the paper left the reasons to my imagination. I blinked up the public and saw no notices about a system stoppage. "Excuse me, what's up with the bus?" A woman with a massive salt and pepper plate opened her eyes.
"What, you never ride a bus before?"
I peeled the sign off the shelter and held it up. "I don't think any of us are taking this bus."
"Oh, spit. That must have happened after we got here."
"How long ago was that?"
"What's it to you?"
"Just wondering. I need this bus to get to work."
"Yeah, us too."
She nudged the other 2 people awake. One of them was a man whose face was more beard than skin.
"Hey, our ride's not coming."
"Fuck off."
"Don't talk to me that way, jackass."
The third, another woman whose hair was short and slicked back, shoved both of them.
"All of you, shut up! I'm trying to sleep before our ride gets here."
"It's not coming."
I blinked plate woman's face into the public so I could get her name, but she didn't register. None of them did. That was weird as hell. They all had union fists under their old indenture tattoos. These people didn't just fall out of orbit into the middle of Brushhead.
"It will. Just wait."
"We've been waiting all day."
"Then you can wait some more. Shut it."
"But they said we were going to start working this morning because they had a deadline."
The look that Short and Slicked threw at Beardface was so sharp that I felt it. He shut up and looked at the ragged bag at his feet. I glanced at it and saw the 7-pointed star stenciled on its surface. I looked behind the bus shelter. Squeezed between the library and the strip joint was a police substation closed for the day. All of it clicked together. The star was the symbol for Mersk Island, Santee Anchorage's prison. The substation was closed because releases were filed in the morning. These three hadn't been able to summon a tuk-tuk because their pies had restricted access. I couldn't blink up their profiles on the public because they hadn't earned them back. They were parolees. I heard nothing.
There was nothing to hear. We're just waiting for a ride.
You want me to call you one?
We got it covered.
I nodded. 18 months ago, finding them housing and jobs and counseling would have been my concern. It didn't happen often during my time as ward chair, but it was always tough. Parolees were kept on short leashes until enough people began to vouch for their behavior, and that meant sticking them in the worst of the non-slot jobs. People got sent to Mersk for crimes against other people. Assault, rape, murder. I've been all over this planet, but I've never had reason to visit Mersk. Not even when Evanroot Sarian was sent there. I clenched my jaw. I hadn't given Sarian a moment's thought until now. He'd been a ward chair from Sow's Reach, home of the first cane refinery in the city. While some people would have seen that as an opportunity to be a good steward to a historic facility, Sarian turned it into the base for destroying the entire transstellar economy. The son of a bitch had tried to burn me alive, and I sometimes wish I'd left him to die in the firestorm he'd intended for me. Instead, he was rotting away on Mersk, serving 50 years for fraud, embezzlement, conspiracy, kidnapping, attempted murder, including mine, and generally being an asshole. A few moments later, a beat-up covered lorry pulled up to the bus stop, and the passenger side window rolled down.
Get in!
The parolees gathered their gear and popped into the back. The girl leaned toward the side window to get a better look at them, then at me. Her eyes went wide, and so did mine. She was one of my employees, a freeborn kid named Lee Huang. I didn't mind my people moonlighting so long as they did it when they weren't supposed to be on my clock.
Oi!
I stepped toward the lorry. Lee Huang's face disappeared from the mirror, and the lorry rumbled away in a cloud of cane diesel exhaust. I blinked in pictures of the lorry's tailgate, only to see that it didn't have a license tag. I blinked up the time, 3:59. I was going to have to spring for a tuk-tuk. I blinked a text to the We Laugh at Physics Travel Corporation, the company my protege Jilly ran. She had put aside her dreams of becoming an airship pilot as the planetary economy slowed. Santee Anchorage still sent more industrial molasses up the cable than any system within a 6-jump radius, but the demand for everything else we made had dwindled. It made more sense for a young woman Jilly's age to keep schlepping people around on the surface than via the air. She'd done really well for herself since her days as a cab driver, even joining the union and earning a fist on her cheek. But she could never get a pie, not unless we convinced the right people with the right tech and the right skills to hop down to our dirt ball. In the meantime, though, she carried a battered handheld that could text at a moment's notice. Now was one of those moments. I texted Jilly.
Need pickup to avoid horrible catastrophe.
On it, bus.
The kid had gotten really good at texting. She could type with her thumbs almost as fast as I could with my eye movements. 2 minutes later, a candy apple red tuk-tuk came to a halt in front of the bus stop. A young woman with biceps the size of ripe coconuts huddled behind the wheel. I hopped in behind her.
The boss sends her regards.
What, she couldn't drive herself?
Not unless there's a race for beer money.
Sometimes I wish that kid had stuck with flight school.
I don't. Jilly's pay rates are great and she lets us take our tuk-tuks home.
Is that an issue?
When you've got tuk-tuks getting boosted from every depot in the city, it sure is.
Well, that's a damn shame. There was a time when no one screwed with the driver's committee. Not unless they wanted to get their own teeth fed to them.
We'll find the thieves, don't you worry.
I felt sorry for whoever was going to be on the business end of her fists. She wore a tailored blouse that managed to make her look businesslike and even more physically impressive than if she'd worn a tank top. Her arms and shoulders bulged as she fiddled with the tuk-tuk's console. She had either spent her life slinging bundles of cane or winning prize fights. Maybe both. What's your name?
Sirikit.
Padma Mehta. You know where we're going?
Uh-huh. The old windswept distillery, right?
You got it.
I'll have you there in 20 minutes.
But it's a 40-minute drive to Tonkei.
Not the way I drive.
She punched the stereo to life, and Balinese opera blasted out from the speakers. I had just enough time to buckle in before we took off like enthusiastic bullets. 19 minutes and 42 seconds later, I had blinked up a timer because watching it kept my mind off the terror of Sirikit cutting around cargo lorries and land trains at ridiculously unsafe speeds, the tuk-tuk came to a gentle halt in front of the two simple, poor-form buildings that housed the old windswept distillery. Estella Tongao, the late founder, had spent a bare minimum on two squat blocks that required no maintenance and could withstand Force 10 winds. The place was as ugly as a swamp hog's backside, but it was what happened inside that counted. Marolo stood outside the entrance, his face streaked with grease. He held up a Caneplas box and shook it. I could tell that he wanted to talk about the box and its contents, but it could wait. Shouldn't Li Huang be here?
Ah, I'm glad you decided to dispense with the small talk and get right to work.
I'd like her to get right to work. Why did I see her driving a lorry when she should be helping crush cane?
We'll get to that. These bearings are shot.
I peered at the two dozen metal balls inside the box. We just replaced these. Hell, I just replaced them.
They're defective. They worked for about 100 hours and then they started pitting.
Damn it! I picked up a bearing. What should have been a perfect sphere looked like it had been nicked and scratched with 40 grit sandpaper.
You need me to stick around?
Please. I turned back to Marolo and held up the bearing. These were rated for 10,000 hours, if I recall.
15,000, actually. I made sure we saved the boxes and the receipts on paper.
Paper? Whatever happened to using a tablet?
You know anyone on this rock making replacement tablet parts? These were relatively cheap. Getting circuitry to fix a busted tablet would cost more than you pay me in a year.
I pay you a lot.
Oh, that you do. But unless you know of someone growing computer hardware on Santee, I'll stick to paper. I can always get more of it.
When can we get more of these?
We have them. Like I said, they were cheap.
Then why in hell did you haul me all the way out here? Is it so I can fire Li Huang? You know you have the power to do that without my say-so.
Li Huang's absence is one of the many things I wanted to talk to you about, starting with the way this place runs. Those bearings are just the icing on the ridiculous cake.
I told you this was going to be a weird gig.
Yeah, but not that it was going to be like this. You have machinery that dates back to the information age. You're using parts that break down when there are upgrades that'll last until the heat death of the universe. You've got people beating cane with cricket bats.
It's the way Madame Tongao did it.
And there it is. The one thing that everyone says when I question why they're doing the stupid thing that they're doing. Estella Tongao always did it this way, so that's why we keep doing it. Why, Padma? For God's sake, why do you keep invoking that woman like she's a creator?
Because she is. She made this distillery and this rum, and whatever she did, we are going to keep on doing because it works.
But even she must have improvised or changed or...
I don't care. If we want to keep making old windswept rum, that means we make it her way. We don't have the room to experiment, especially since neither of us are chemists like she was.
We can find chemists.
And they're welcome to monkey around with their own formulas in their own labs, but not here. Look, I appreciate you looking out for this place. I know it all seems weird.
Because it is.
But it's only been 18 months since I've taken over. Madame Tongao had 30 years of experience running the distillery, and that was after another 30 years of playing with McDonald Heavy's chemistry sets. All my time at the plant didn't set me up for the intricacies of her operation. That's why I hired you.
I thought it was because a previous foreman had quit on you.
So we had some personal friction. I put an arm around Marolo's shoulder and guided him up to the press house. That always happens when an outfit changes hands. And hey, hasn't this gig been better than schlepping cane out of the campong?
It's certainly weirder.
No arguments there. Marolo stopped at the door to the press house and opened it for me. There was no need for a lock because there was nothing inside worth stealing. Everything was third hand and held together with baling wire and foul language. The giant rollers on the cane press were scarred and scratched and completely worthless even for scrap. The still itself, a conglomeration of funnels, coils, pots and pans, all made from copper or coral steel, or in the case of the second condenser, palm fronds, wouldn't have gotten more than a couple of yuan because there would have been no way to take it out the door except in tiny pieces. Bits of bagasse littered the floor, and the giant rollers glinted in the afternoon light. I walked up to the rollers. These still need a wiping.
I know, but that's somebody else's job.
Spoken like a union diehard.
Ty, you take that back,
I will, if you tell me why the rollers aren't clean.
I had someone who was doing that, but then she up and left.
Who? I don't get it. Lee Wong's been here almost as long as you have, and I thought she liked it. Hell, she's one of the few people who doesn't wince whenever I sing with whatever bollypop comes over the wireless. If anything, she sings louder than me.
You haven't been here in a while. 2 weeks ago, she showed up long enough to clear out her locker and tell me to take my job and shove it.
What?
Uh-huh. Caught me off guard, too. She told me off, then she walked away.
Except I saw her today in Brushhead, driving a lorry.
You sure it was her?
She took off as soon as she saw I saw her. It was her. Marolo grabbed a couple of towels from a workbench and tossed me one. I got to work wiping down the rollers with Marolo, leaving cane juice on the press. That was a no-no. The roller's beat-up surface meant that all kinds of lovely bacteria would grow if left alone. Every day, the press had to be wiped down, then sanitized with vinegar to make sure nothing contaminated the freshly squeezed cane juice. Marolo and I knocked it out within 15 minutes. Did Li Huang say anything before she left?
Nope. Other than that I was a sellout, giving up my natural-born rights to keep a rotten system going.
Since when was she into labor theory?
You know how these kids are. One day they're plugging away, happy as clams. The next they're railing about worker exploitation.
Yeah, I'm sure it happens all the time. The rollers cleaned. We wheeled over an ancient hydraulic jack to the press's left side. I coiled chain around the axle, and we took turns loosening the 7-centimeter bolts that kept the rotor housing in place. I finished the last bolt and handed it to Marolo. He handed me a packet of new ball bearings, and I slipped them into place. I made sure the bearings were set, then refit the housing. I had to give it an extra tap with the butt of the wrench. So, we're only going to get 100 hours out of these?
If we're lucky. I'm no engineer, but even I can tell inferior materials when I see them. All this equipment that Tang Gao insisted on using, it's all crap.
But it's cheap crap.
Which you will not be able to afford in a few years.
Worrying about the books is my problem.
Well, it's everyone's when we depend on the paycheck.
Marolo had rinsed and dried the bolts, making sure to wipe some palm oil on the threads.
You know, I talked with the old-timers, the ones who stayed on. They said that Tang Gao was rich as hell, that she blew all kinds of cash.
That she did. The bolts were numbered, so I put number one into place and started cranking. But her fortune is still tied up in probate, and it isn't connected to the distillery. I don't have that kind of money, and I don't think I ever will.
Maybe if you found that missing case at tenure.
Oh, God, I've told you, there is no such thing. We don't age our rum that long anymore.
But we should. I've always got people telling me they'd pay top yuan for a shot.
Then they can buy a barrel of our classic and let it sit for a decade. They want Tang Gao's mystique, and we don't have that anymore. We've just got the old standby, and that brings in enough money to keep us all happy.
But what'll you do if that runs out?
Work, just like I always have. I put in bolt number two and tightened it.
And, what about us?
I told you when you came on board there were no guarantees. The chances are still really good that I'll bring this whole distillery down in flames. I might even do it literally, since old Windswept is 150 proof.
Please don't joke about that.
Marolo handed me bolt number three.
I did enough slash and burn drills when I was a kid. Oh, dig cover, hold my ass.
I don't think we have to worry about that, seeing how Tang Gao made everything out of metal and porform. I cranked in the bolt and reached for number four. Are you really that worried, Marolo? Am I mismanaging this place?
I didn't say that.
But you sure implied it.
I know you're incredibly busy back in Brushhead. I just want to make sure you're aware of everything that's going on here.
Like the fact that you and I are the only ones here on a Thursday afternoon?
Ah, so you are aware.
I cranked in the last two bolts. Li Huang's not the only one who's left, is she?
Well, she's the only one I can't get a hold of.
Where is everyone else, then? Marolo looked away as we lowered the roller back in place.
I think everyone else has quit without quitting.
I've heard of a lot of passive-aggressive labor moves in my time, but this sounds new.
Nobody wants to come in because they're convinced you're going to lay them off.
Well, people do tend to lose their jobs when they don't perform them.
This is a hard thing for all of us. You know how rare it is for us freeborn to leave the kampong and work in the city? It just doesn't feel right. The way all you union people stare off into space when you're typing with your eyes.
You know, there are freeborn in the union. The Prez, for instance.
But she's rare. Besides, she actually likes being a manager.
And you don't?
I run a small distillery. She's got to run a government. That means more people, more money, more headaches. Not that I wouldn't mind us getting our act together. I don't know how you union people do it.
Probably because we don't resort to blowing stuff up.
Hey, it was never proven that the Freeborn Organizing Committee had anything to do with those bombings.
I know. Besides, that was all before my time. I was still an indenture when all that went down.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of other people I know. It was either before their time or beneath their interest.
You think I don't care about working conditions for Freeborn people?
I think you may not know the whole story.
I have plenty of time, apparently.
Nah, forget it. It's history now. And it's just as well the FOC burned out. That would have meant turning this place into more of a city.
I hope you guys don't all think I'm some lunatic who's going to destroy your lives. I've never made anyone sign long-term contracts or anything that ties them to working here. And what about Martha? I got her that gig over at Bill Beaulieu's when she wanted to be closer to her dad.
This is all true. But the city's not the Kampong, Padma. It moves faster. It's not dependent on rainfall or cane rats or fungus.
So it's different from what you know.
Exactly.
And it's different for everyone else who comes here. It's a shock for someone who breaches, no matter where they lived before. Hell, I've been here 14 years and I get thrown every now and then.
Oh, what, you?
Yes, me. There are little things like using tiffin boxes instead of food wrappers, or shortages of staples like coffee or curried ketchup. The big things, too. I was born in a hospital that looked like a greenhouse. My pediatrician was a palm tree.
See, that's not fair, trying to make me feel like a hick.
I'm serious. My pediatrician was terrified of getting germs from his patients, so he used an animatronic palm tree to talk with us. He'd operate it by remote control from a bunker. Sweet guy, always gentle with the exams. That would never happen here. It wouldn't be a thought for anyone. I know this sounds cliche, but all of us, Union and Freeborn, we're all trying to live our lives and not get too screwed by the big three.
That's a great line.
Isn't it? And so's this. Are you going to do this Zen quitting thing on me too? Or are you going to help me figure out how to get everyone back?
That's easy. Everyone just needs to see you here more often.
Really? That's it? Everyone went home because they think I'm some absentee employer? The city's only a 40-minute ride away.
But it's still the city. They want to know you'll work out here, with them.
Okay. What the hell? I don't have that much of a life. Might as well spend the little I've got out here.
Yeah. Also, everyone would like you to talk with that guy from the co-op.
What guy from the co-op?
You know, the one with the funky beard. The one that looks like he's got a crab hanging from his lower lip.
Vikram Ramadi? What's he been doing here?
Trying to get the co-op to buy you out.
He... what?
Oh, you mean you haven't talked with him?
No, I don't believe I have, though I'm sure as hell about to, probably with a cricket bat. Did he make an offer to you?
Not as such.
Marolo, did the vice chair of the Santee Anchorage Distillers Cooperative give you an offer on this place? Or is this some new kind of Zen aggression?
It's nothing like that. He just came here yesterday, took a look around, made sure our payments were up to date, asked what I thought about the cane harvest.
Wait, what about the harvest?
Other producers are having problems getting the cane they were contracted. But that's because they're idiots who work with idiot growers. Remember that guy in Bangsar? The one who flooded his fields with raw sewage because he thought it'd help the soil?
The guy who lost a foot to sepsis? Yeah, what about him?
Those are the growers Vikram's dealing with. And it doesn't affect us because we grow our own. That, by the way, is one of the things I'm glad I don't have to worry about. Nothing's threatening our supply of cane.
No, but Vikram Ramadi is threatening my calm and placid mind. What did he say?
He was worried about the future of this distillery because of certain rumors he'd been hearing. Rumors about people not showing up to work, about slowed production, about...
About?
About the state of your mental health. He was worried that all of this work, here and in the plant, it was all too much pressure. And he wasn't sure you'd be able to meet your obligations to the co-op. And if that happened, if I saw any signs that you were going to crack, then he and the other owners would be happy to make sure we all kept our jobs and kept this place running, by making a takeover offer under Article 33.
Article 33?
You know it, right?
I have the entire co-op charter memorized, and I am intimately familiar with Article 33.
Huh. Wow, I really thought you'd be more upset.
Oh, I am. However, I am a professional, so I'm not going to let my anger take charge of my actions. Not until I'm sure I can legally punch that crab-bearded motherfucker into the middle of the ocean.
That sounds more like you.
He actually invoked Article 33?
Well, like I said, it wasn't an official offer, but it sure sounded like he was dancing around the subject.
See, this is the reason why it would be worth you having some kind of recording device on your person at all times, so you can stop people from sneaky underhanded moves and force them to pull blatant underhanded moves.
Well, I did tell him thanks, but no thanks.
Doesn't matter. He smells blood in the water, and he's not going to stop until the co-op gobbles this place up.
But they can't do that, right? Not yet.
We're fine, finance-wise. I can show you the numbers.
I know them. You sing them to me every payday.
Then I'll have to sing louder, because you're the only one who's heard. What do you see?
An empty distillery.
And why is it empty?
Oh, Lord. Everyone is panicked, and that will mean nothing gets done. So, of course, the place will go under. Now I want to hit him. What tool should I use?
You leave that up to me.
Not on your life. He wants to come in here and screw up the best job I've ever had. Not without a fight.
Which, like I said, you will leave up to me. I'm the owner. I'm in the co-op. They want to try and screw us with rules and procedure? We'll use them right back.
You got a lawyer?
I used to. But I think I can handle it. After telling Sirikit to drive much, much slower, we eased to a stop in front of the head office of the Santee Anchorage Rum Producers Cooperative, way the hell northwest in Xochimilco Grove. This was where the sidewalk ended and the campong began. The co-op office, an architectural student's fever dream of warped glass, reclaimed hull plates, and iron palm deckwork, huddled at the end of Chung Kwong Street. Behind it spread the campong, the great fields of sugarcane that rolled beyond the western horizon. Beyond lay the millions of hectares of cane, their leaves flapping in the evening breeze.
I thought it would smell more like rum.
Not here. I hopped out of the tuk-tuk. This place is nothing but business. Everything here used to support the distilleries back when there were only a few of them. Sand would get hauled up to that plant. I nodded at one squat square coated with soot and melted into glass for the bottling plant there. I turned to a triangular building made entirely of blue-green glass before getting labeled there.
Not anymore?
Too many distilleries now. Not enough room. Also, some members like to control every aspect of their operation, but they stick with the co-op.
Why?
Damned if I know. You need anything?
I'd kill for some omusubi right now.
I handed her a 100 yuan note. 2 streets south, 3 streets west. Find the place with the blue Maneki Neko on the door. Ask for Ian or Keiko, and they'll hook you up.
You expect me to spend this whole blue boy?
Depends on how hungry you are. Come back in 20 minutes, please. Sirikit zipped away for food while I stood in front of the co-op. I held on to a torque wrench, wondering how I would have to play this.
Swing first. Ask questions later.
Shut up. I blinked up the time. 4:58. Oy. I'd been here every 2 weeks ever since I first showed up with the deed to the distillery, and every time I'd wanted to claw my eyes out. It wasn't the members, most of whom were lovely, or the building itself, which had a really nice view from the second story that made me feel like I was on a boat on the edge of a great green ocean. No, it was the meetings. From university to business school to my Walwa gig to becoming ward chair, I had probably attended 3,294 meetings. None of them, not even the times when I had to negotiate between the teams that controlled the soap supply and the ones who mucked out the water plant's shit tanks, were as interminable as the ones I had attended at the co-op. Now, I'd always had the feeling that there was a second, deeper group that kept things humming along, one that met somewhere tucked away from eavesdropping and the co-op's lengthy bylaws. The fact that the 600 distilleries scattered across the planet had managed to keep the co-op functioning and profitable told me that someone had a steady hand on the tiller and another on a cricket bat. I only had to look and wait, and I would get a sign. A young woman in a business suit came out of the building, her face lit with a smile as she flipped through a sheaf of papers. She stopped short of bumping into me, and the smile vanished when she saw the "don't mess with me" look on my face. "Don't worry, I'm a co-op member." She smiled again, and there was something about her perfect skin and perfect teeth that screamed Life Corporate. She had no tattoo on her cheek, however.
"In that case, can I interest you in contributing to the Co-op Mutual Fund? It's a way to share our success with the rest of the planet."
"Maybe another time." Her eyes drifted down to the wrench in my hand. She nodded and hustled away as fast as her pumps could carry her. I entered the building, the battered steel doors sliding shut behind me. The interior offices were built around a central atrium filled with all the varieties of heirloom cane, the kind that made rum instead of industrial fuel. A white kid in his 20s sat behind a desk made of burnished metal, its top covered by cheap brochures hawking co-op rums and the Co-op Mutual, a scheme that got suckers to invest in the co-op without having any voting rights. The kid's uninked face stared down at a terminal. The nameplate in front of him said Todd. I tapped on the desk, and the kid looked up and gave me a smile so sweet my pancreas freaked out.
"Good evening, Miss Maida. How may I help you?"
"Is Vikram in?" Todd's smile flickered. I didn't wait for a response. Around the table, through the atrium, and up the stairs I went. Vikram had the third best office in the building, the one with an eastern-facing window looking out over the city and the water beyond. I blinked my pie into recording and gave Vikram the courtesy of knocking twice before opening his door. He stood at the eastern window, his back to me. In his left hand, he held a crumpled piece of paper. In the other was a bottle with a few centiliters of golden rum swirling around the bottom. "Vikram!" He turned to me, and I was stunned. Deep bags hung under his red, puffy eyes. His indenture tattoo, a galleon's steering wheel, stood out on his blotchy skin.
"Oh, Padma. Thank God you're here. We are so fucked."
"Vikram, what's going on?"
"The end of days, that's what." "Oh, God. We're done. We're so done. How could this happen? What are we gonna do?"
"Vikram, are you there?" Vikram held up his left hand, the crumpled paper flapping like a flag of surrender. He didn't say anything. He just waved his arm back and forth until I plucked the paper from his grip. The paper was a summary of heirloom cane yields for the past month. The last time I had seen numbers this low was 18 months ago, after we'd burned out the last of the crops infected with Vitae Bloombeck's mutant blackstripe. A quarter of the planet's cane had to be burned to cinders, and it had set back the co-op for months. I looked again and realized the yields were even lower. Is this right?
Paper doesn't lie, except when it does. But this doesn't, because I have checked. We are fucked!
Is there a new infection? Something screwing with the crops?
That. Something is indeed screwing with our crops, our cane, our livelihoods. And it starts with Wall and ends in Wah.
What do they have to do with us?
Everything! Those goat fuckers in Thronil have refused to recertify our cane for export.
What, again?
Yes, again. And not just the industrial muck we send up the cable. Now they're not going to let us export our rum, even if it was bottled before the lifter blew up.
That's bullshit!
Indeed it is! Which is why you need to give us your cane.
Excuse me?
Yes! You had to keep doing things the way Stella did. Making your own deals with your own producers, paying above the co-op's rates, getting your own certification. What's the point of being in a co-op if you're not going to look out for its interests? Why are you here?
You mean right now or in a general existential sense? Vikram, did you try and push an Article 33 on my foreman?
You would have been compensated. $2.5 million easily, just from the cane alone. Throw in the actual product and three is a fair offer.
Why would you try to buy my perfectly profitable distillery?
Because we're fucked.
I think you need to explain that right now.
Oh, I feel sick.
Vikram, I'm recording this. You can either explain it to me or in front of the entire co-op.
They won't care. They want your cane because all of ours isn't coming in.
You just said the problem is with Wawa.
It is. Part of it.
Tell me what's going on. All of it, right now.
No one wants to work for us anymore.
What, at the distilleries?
In the fields. There's no cane coming in because the farms are being abandoned, haven't you heard?
I spend 10 hours a day in a hole in the ground, Vikram. I'm lucky to know what week it is. How long has this been going on?
3 months. No one's cutting cane. No one's setting it out to cure. No one's bringing it to the presses. Millions of hectares are just growing wild, and no one's around to take care of them.
How do you know?
Because I've been out there. I spent the past week touring cane farms, and all of them are abandoned. And I'm not talking about the little ones. I mean outfits like Royo's and Char's. Big producers, all empty. Like the people were plucked into the sky.
And you haven't asked around?
Who? Who is there to ask? We went to the police and they said there's been no crime, no reports of missing persons, nothing they can do. It's a big planet. People move around all the time. I just wish they hadn't all moved at once.
So you thought the best way to fix this was to scare my employees into leaving? Also, my distillery could fall apart and you could snap it up?
It sounded better when we planned it out.
Vikram started to turn green. I nudged a wastebasket over to him. You could have asked. That's what adults do when they're in business together.
Oh, and would you have given it all up? Because that's what we need, Padma. If the co-op's going to keep producing enough rum to meet our obligations, we need 800,000 kilotons of certified cane by next month.
Vikram, that's more cane than I grow in a year. What the hell is going on?
We have obligations.
You said that. I have the feeling they're not orders for rum.
People want to start cashing in their mutual certificates. We need to back them up. The only way to do that is to sell more rum, so we need more cane.
Well, you'll just have to tell them to wait, because it's not going to happen now.
See? See? That's the same kind of attitude Tongao would have given us. She may have been a member, but it was more in name than in practice. She always kept to herself, always donated the minimum.
Some members haven't ponied up at all. You've got some who are years behind on dues.
And now they'll be even farther because you won't help them.
Vikram leaned over the wastebasket. You know, Vikram, I get why the co-op exists. We do all need each other. But there are some people who seem to think that the members work to keep the co-op going and not the other way around.
You don't get to lecture me.
Oh, yes, I do. Because I have video of you talking about a conspiracy to screw me out of my hard-won business. And it's the kind of video that can knock this place to its foundation.
You wouldn't.
Do you think I'm an idiot, Vikram? Do you think I'm just going to roll over and show you my belly because you've got a nice office? Have you not heard my theme song?
I hate that song.
And I can have the entire Brushhead Memorial Band here in 10 minutes to play it live if you don't shape up.
What do you want?
I want you to sit down, drink some water, and sober up. Then, I want you to tell me every single producer that's not producing anymore.
Why you?
Who else? I can't stand you assholes. But we're still in the co-op together. That seal means I get a good price on my rum, and that means I can pay my people so they're happy to stick around and make more rum that I can sell with the co-op seal. That's how business is supposed to work.
You and I know that's bullshit. Business is about grabbing as much as you can for yourself before the other guy can.
Which of us went to B school, and which of us piloted Starship Tugs? It took Vikram another half hour of retching and rehydrating until he started to feel better. He kept babbling the names of abandoned farms, and I kept blinking up the locations and marking them on the map. It all added up to a big, frightening picture. Farm workers, whether they were freeborn or breeches, were disappearing, which left the co-op with a dwindling supply of crushable cane. And what little cane was left wasn't going up the cable thanks to Walwa's dickishness. I kept watching the time. 6 o'clock loomed closer. I think I have enough to go on.
What do you mean?
I mean, I'm going to solve this problem for you. I'm going to get people back into the fields, get the cane harvest in, and this will all go away.
It will?
Provided you do something for me.
Anything, Padma. Oh, anything.
The first thing is that you're going to round up everyone who tried to bully me into giving you my cane. And you will tell them that when this is over, they are all paying my share into the co-op for the rest of my natural life. Vikram gawked. I took a step toward the door.
All right.
The second thing is that you'll resign as vice chair.
But my pension!
Oh, intercourse your pension. You wanted to play hardball. This is what happens when you lose.
No. I refuse.
Then enjoy it when you're impeached. The red tuk-tuk sat in front of Haretahi, the omusubi-ya I always went to after co-op meetings. It was a tiny shop, barely 3 meters wide and twice as deep, with most of the space taken up by the counter and the rice cooker. Keiko Nakashima, the owner, was working tonight, and her face brightened when I ducked in the door.
Your friend here has become a fan.
Sirikit sat at the counter, leaving a sliver of room for me. She held a triangular rice ball wrapped in nori.
These are so good. How have I never had them before?
You got me. I squeezed into a seat. Didn't you have rice on the campong?
Yeah, but it got mixed with peas and goat and curry. Please tell me you've got curry, because that would be the greatest thing ever.
Keiko smiled and started rolling another omusubi.
I think I can make that happen. You want one too, Padma?
Hell yes. How's business? Keiko held a wad of rice in her palm. She scooped a spoonful of orange-brown curry into the middle, then started pressing the rice with her hands.
Been busier. Just as well, seeing how Sammy quit.
Your niece?
2 weeks ago, she shows up late to her shift, announces she has learned a better way to live her life, and that she needs her salary right then and there.
I thought back to Sammy, a funny, bookish 18-year-old who studied polymers. She was the picture definition of punctual, even for her 7 a.m. classes at Santee Open School. What did you do?
I told her to get to work. She cleaned out the cash box, called me a parasite enabler, and marched out.
Holy shit!
You got that right.
Keiko handed an omusubi to Sirikit.
How could she leave this? It's so good.
No idea. I don't think it was drugs or drink or hormones. Now, Sammy had a steady girlfriend. She was doing all kinds of great research at Open School. It was so sudden. So unlike her.
You know, same thing happened in my family. I live in the city, but my folks are still in Lualua, you know. Couple days ago, Mom comes into the shop and tells me my youngest brother had up and left, grabbed everything valuable he could, said we were foreclosing on our legacies as freeborn, and marched out into the cane. No one's seen him since.
Well, I sure have seen Sammy. 2 days ago, Magdalena, a girlfriend who runs the veggie shop, she calls me, says Sammy had just boosted a case of carrots. Instead of sticking the cops on Sammy, Magdalena tails Sammy to this rundown spot on Hudson and Hawks. Sammy goes in with the veggies, and these two giant people at the door stop Magdalena from going in. They say only those wanting salvation can enter. Magdalena just wanted her carrots.
Have you gone to this place, Keiko?
Uh-huh. I got the same treatment. Two big people at the door, bit about salvation. All of these other people keep coming in and out, and I can hear a lot inside. People laughing, someone preaching. It was weird. I kept bugging the big guys, and then someone comes out. This white guy I'd never seen before.
Freeborn?
His skin was terrible, but I could make out some ink. He gives me a smile and asks if I'd come to be saved. I told him I'd come to get my niece. He just smiles and says, there are no nieces here, just brothers and sisters in the struggle to liberate their souls. And he leaves.
You get a good look at this guy, the smiler?
Mid-40s, looked beat up, wore a suit that was too big for him.
What color was the suit?
White, sparkling clean too. I don't know how he did it.
Keiko handed me an omusubi. Make it to go, and give me the address. Fucking hell. Evan Root Sarian was out of prison. It was 5 after 5 when Sirikit stopped across the street from 1801 Hawks Street. 1801 Hawks looked like someone had taken care of it, at least from the outside. There was no sign in front, just a stenciled picture of a union fist holding a star going supernova. The walls were scrubbed clean of dirt and graffiti, and the double doors swung open easily for the few people who came in and out. Even the former goons stationed at the doors wore clean clothes. I noted they wore glass pins with the same fist and nova as the sign in front. Sarian had had a thing for glasswork back at Sow's Reach. I had blinked up Sarian's record and found that he didn't exist anymore. There was a data footprint that began the day he arrived on Santee Anchorage and ended when he was remanded into custody on Mersk. No mentions of release or parole. He just vanished, leaving behind a lot of pissed-off people and a giant black mark on his union profile. I took no small amount of satisfaction in seeing Sarian taken apart one piece at a time during testimony. All the talk about how he was leading the union in the epic fight against the Big Three, about how he worked to help us maintain our basic human dignity, all while he was fleecing his ward and trying to burn down the entire world. It was a sweet sight when he blubbered to the judge and threw himself at the mercy of the court. 50 years was too good for him. I have a favor to ask. Will you come in there with me?
You, scared of something?
I think the guy in there is someone who tried to kill me.
Over what?
Money, turf, the purity of my commitment to the Universal Freelancers Union.
And how do you feel about that?
I'm sorry?
How did that make you feel? I'm not just a tuk-tuk driver. I'm putting myself through school to be a post-traumatic stress counselor. Do you want to talk about what happened to you?
Not yet, but thank you.
Whenever you're ready, words matter.
Then I saw him. In the evening hustle, I spotted another pair of former goons, each of them 2 meters tall and 100 kilos heavy. Between them marched a man in an immaculate white suit that hung from his shoulders. All of them had the same glass pins as the goons at the door. The man in the middle looked like a skinnier, balder, blotchier version of Evinrute Sarian.
Is that him?
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
Sarian stopped at the door, with much affectionate handshaking and backslapping going around between him and the 4 goons. 10 minutes ago, I would have said I wanted you to punch his lights out. Now, I have no idea.
Whatever you do, just keep calm.
Right. I got out of the tuk-tuk and marched across the street. Hey! Hey! The 4 goons and Sarian turned. 2 of the goons pulled billy clubs from thin air. Fear flickered across Sarian's face as the goons with clubs shoved him behind their giant backs.
Can we help you?
You can step out of my way. I have to talk to him. Sirikit ran to my side. I had no doubt of how she'd do in a fight against 4 goons, but I also knew that starting a fight was a good way to lose track of what had happened to Keiko's niece. I need to talk to Evinrute Sarian. He knows who I am. The goons froze, then looked at each other. I considered using command presence on them to get them to freeze when a pair of beat-up hands appeared on their shoulders and nudged them aside like curtains. Evinrute Sarian stood before us, his eyes watering.
Sister Padma, is that you?
Uh-huh. He took a few careful steps toward us. Sarian's cheekbones jutted out from a hollow face. Liver spots dotted his thinning pate. He looked like he'd aged 30 years. He held out a hand, wrinkled like a crow's foot. My right hook caught him square in the middle of his face. His eyes rolled into the back of his head. His body tilted on his heels. The goons caught him before he hit the ground.
I'm sorry. I deserved that, and more.
Sirikit's hands gripped my upper arms with enough force to keep me from hitting him again.
Actually, I'd hoped we could meet. I have a lot of apologizing and explaining due.
I don't think I want to hear it.
I know. I wouldn't expect you to. This must all seem strange.
You have no idea.
Oh, but I do. I have been humbled, Sister Padma.
Don't call me that!
Of course. I forget I'm not in the Union anymore, even though we're all united together in the struggle. Come along. Services are going to start soon. There's refreshments, though no rum, I'm afraid. But we're not teetotalers, oh no. We just don't have the budget right now.
If I let you go, are you going to hit him again?
I make no guarantees.
Won't you let me show you around? Just a brief tour. There's so much I have to do to atone, and this is part of it.
You start swinging again, I'm not going to stick around.
Okay. Sirikit, let go. Okay, Sarian. Let's see what you got.
I've wanted to talk with you, but I was sure you wouldn't want anything to do with me. I'm very thankful that you've come here.
This is very difficult for me, as I'm sure you can tell.
I can only imagine. I was terrible to you. I tried to kill you. I can never expect you to forgive me for that, but I'm thankful I didn't succeed. You're a good person, Padma. You've given so much to this city, to the Union, and I don't think you've ever been properly rewarded.
I never expected a reward.
But you deserve one. Everyone here does, for living our lives. Every day when we're not living under the Big Three's control is a victory. Every day we help each other is a good one.
Sarian pushed open the doors.
Come inside, and maybe we can start righting those wrongs. Come and see what the Temple of the New Holy Light is all about.
He walked into the building, the goons holding the doors for us. I gave Sirikit a nod, and we entered the building. It was boring. There was a single room, 20 meters square, with dingy beige walls and LEDs overhead. Six benches made from cast-off crates and ship parts faced a battered podium. At the far wall was a makeshift altar with a picture of the working Christ, a carved Buddha, and an icon of Ganesha. Cheap incense smoldered in the offering bowls. It looked like Sarian was pan-denominational. I wondered what kinds of theological hoops he jumped through to make this all work. On either side of the door were two long tables. Two women sorted clothes on one table, and two men sorted jars of jam and preserved fish on another. Someone had written, "Take what you need, give what you can," on the wall above the tables. Two electric hot plates sat on the floor, and giant kettles of green soup simmered inside. And the people, they all looked ragged and hungry and tired. Sarian led us around the room. Where did they all come from?
From the kampong, and from the alleys of the city. They're the people who've fallen through the cracks.
There are no cracks. Everyone on this planet gets food, shelter, medical care.
But some don't.
Sarian pointed at a couple in their 50s, cradling bowls on their laps.
Maurice there. He's a shareholder who used to have his own welding shop. His Pi malfunctioned after the last firmware update, and he kept losing texts from clients. They got so frustrated they stopped going to him for work, and his reputation took a hit. He lost the shop, and then his husband Diem got meningitis, which screwed up his Pi. They got booted from their flat because their landlord wanted an excuse to tear it down and rebuild, and they can't keep their appointments with lawyers or doctors. They'd given up when I found them.
He nodded at a young woman unwrapping a coil of wire.
Su Yin came from the kampong to go to the open school. She got her tablet stolen her first day in the city, before she could even get herself on the public. It's a 4-month wait to get on the rolls through paper channels because no one in the union wants to deal with finding the forms. She's ashamed to go home. She slept in our doorway.
Eventually, we sat at the front of the building, bowls of stuff resembling lentil soup on our laps. How did this all happen?
It was in prison. Have you ever been to Mersk?
I've tried to avoid it.
That's how I felt when the airship dropped me off. The criminals who get sent there are the worst of the worst. The ones who had no business being a part of society. I was sure I would get murdered within 2 minutes of landing. But it wasn't like that. If anything, it's harder. The guards and the prisoners have to work together to grow crops, to keep the water flowing, to make the place thrive. 300 people on a patch of land that's only 500 hectares. And if you don't get with the program, you don't eat. There's no black market, no underground trading, because everyone's busy repairing fishing nets or manning fishing nets or gutting fish. I am not a fan of fish anymore. Everyone talks, too. We talk while we work, we talk at meals, we talk during sessions. We have plenty of time to reflect and think about what we did. I thought it was all bullshit. Until my second year.
What happened?
I realized that I was all bullshit. Everything I'd done, it was all for my own purposes. Starting with me becoming a recruiter for Walwa. I just saw people as units to process and take advantage of. I was so disconnected from humanity, even after I breached. And I couldn't let go of that. It took going to prison and losing all my power to remind me that I was a person, and I had to rely on other people. And to do that, I had to earn their respect.
Is that how you got out so early?
I didn't want to go.
What?
There was a structure and a peace that came from living and working there. And the fact that all of us had to talk and listen. That made it clear that I'd lived my life the wrong way. I did all the talking, but I never listened. I never thought about what I had to do to make others' lives better. I was elected to leave early and bring that attitude back here. I'm starting at the bottom with this.
With a church?
Faith without works is dead. I still have faith in the struggle, but I know it has to start here, in my heart. I found something I can't put into words, but I can put it into action.
Sarian blinked like he'd just been poked in the ribs.
Speaking of action, it's time for the 5:30 service. Can you stay?
I looked at Sirikit. Can you get me to Samarkand Road before 6?
We can stay 10 minutes.
I have an appointment, Sarian, but I can stick around. Sarian walked to the front of the room and clapped his hands.
Has everyone gotten enough to eat?
People appeared from back rooms and from the front doors. Within a few minutes, 30 people had filled the benches. A third of them had ink. None of them were Sammy or Li Huang. Sarian stood in front of the altar.
Friends, it's been a tremendous week for our flock. We've gotten new donations of jellied eel from Becton's, and I understand our PV committee will be installing some new cells this week on the Wisniewski's house.
A young couple with a baby waved at everyone.
Yes, a good week. And there's always more we can do. There's more we must do, and not just here in the city, but for our brothers and sisters in the Kampong. They're the ones whose toil lets everyone live. The more cane they cut, the more money flows back to us. Though we know that's not quite true, right? No, it's not true. If it were, we wouldn't be here. We'd be in our flats, at our jobs, maybe knocking back a few fingers of the co-op's finest. But what can we do? What should we do?
We have to go if you want to make your 6 o'clock.
Fine, let's get out of here. We pulled up to number 42 Samarkand Road.
You want me to stick around? I have a feeling you'll have more places to go.
Not tonight. I walked to the empty front stoop and patted the spot where the late Mrs. Karpinski used to sit and smoke. God, I missed bullshitting with her. I blinked up the time. 5:55. But tomorrow, probably, yeah. Around 4-ish. And tell Jilly she needs to get out of the office.
I'll send the boss your regards.
She zipped off into traffic, and I ran 5 flights up to my flat. Once inside, I didn't waste any time. I locked the door and went to the kitchen. The bottle of old windswept sat in the back of the cupboard, hiding behind the spices. I walked around the flat, closing all the blackout curtains, but for the one covering the window facing the ocean. I set the bottle on my dining table and pulled a hurricane candle and a matchbook from underneath. I blinked up the time. 5:59. I lit the candle. And there I sat, bottle, candle, the dancing flame. My little room now bathed in the warm glow. Me, sitting in this chair, at this table, in this flat, in this neighborhood, in this city, on this planet, in this system, in this cluster, in this galaxy, in this universe. I unscrewed the bottle cap and took that tiny sip. The warm line of rum ran down my throat into my belly, and I imagined that heat shooting up my spine into my brain. All those spots that got screwed up by my transit, all those neurons fried by the hibernant or business school or bad luck, none of that mattered for this moment. Here and now, I was whole and healthy, and fuck you, the fear.
That looked delicious.
I jumped out of my chair. A woman sat in my overstuffed chair, her hands on the armrests. I did a quick look behind me to make sure no one else was hiding in my flat. I moved to the nearest curtain and threw it open. When I saw who was in the chair, the bottle dropped, along with my jaw. Letitia Arbusto Smythe, the president of the Santee Anchorage chapter of the Universal Freelancers Union, gave me a polite smile, her uninked cheeks glowing. She uncrossed her legs. She had her electric green hair tied up, a sign that this was a business call. What the fuck are you doing in my flat, Letty?
Your landlady let me in.
I'll have to file a complaint with the housing committee, then. No one's supposed to come in here without my say-so. She glared at me. I shrugged. It's in the lease.
Hmm.
Letty nodded at the bottle on the floor.
You gonna waste that?
I looked down. Old windswept came in triangular bottles of sea-green glass. This one was open. I picked up the bottle, walked back into the kitchen, and put it away.
Not even a finger for the prez.
I'm always happy to serve my guests. My invited guests.
Oh, come on, Padma. You still owe me a drink.
Since when?
Since that night you dragged me to karaoke.
First of all, that was 9 years ago. Second, you dragged me to that crappy little bar. And third, you didn't even sing.
I don't like the way my voice sounds.
You give weekly speeches on the public.
That's speaking. Singing is another beast. Besides, this was the only way we could talk without all the eyes and ears of the world watching us.
We both have video cameras in our heads.
But they don't work when I have this.
She held up a little box. I blinked back my Pi's buffer and got static. Letty, are you jamming me in my own home?
I am indeed.
She pocketed the jammer.
Because the Union needs you, Padma. But no one can know about it.
I walked to the door. Thank you for visiting. I'll be sure to take this into consideration come election time. With a flourish, I opened the door and bowed low. Now go home. A woman in a deck jacket and work boots swung around from the doorposts. Before I could react, she got between me and the door. She put her back to the door and faced me. And I had the damnedest feeling of déjà vu. The woman looked my age, though her skin was so smooth there was no way she'd spent any time in the sun. She had a Liao Khan Security Services tattoo on her cheek, a deep green dagger with a red merlion coiled around the blade. The ink lines were crisp, like she'd only gotten it a month ago, but there was no way she was a rookie. This is some shameful shit, Letty. Breaking into my place, having your little thug keep me from bouncing your ass on the street. You really want me to go to everyone else on the executive committee? Don't you think Leanne Nogales would love to hear about you getting all power-grabby?
I think Leanne would do the same if she faced the same situation.
Which is what?
Pour me a drink and I'll tell you.
Tell your attack poodle to wait outside. She doesn't look house-trained.
No, it's okay. Thank you, Jennifer. Please wait outside.
Jennifer's upper lip twitched into a micro-sneer as she slipped out the door. I threw the deadbolt. Where did you find her?
Same place I find everyone who's useful. A bar.
Well, she certainly has a great tableside manner. I got a bottle of Beaulieu's blend out for Letty. Endless supply of old windswept aside, I wasn't about to share my best with her, not after this crap. Letty moved over to my little table and blew out the candle.
She just came down the cable earlier this year. Interesting story. She was in personal security for some ag executive, and her boss wanted her to go out and rough up some tenant farmers. She punched out her boss, freaked out, and stowed away on the first outbound ship she could find. 4 years later, she slips down the cable, and little Charlemagne put her to work as a bouncer.
I put the bottle and two glasses on the table. I poured two fingers in her glass. Is that why his place started getting good reviews? I know it wasn't for his food. He burns water.
She certainly changed the ambiance. Once she rousted out the troublemakers and bullies, it became a more pleasant place to hang out.
Yeah, but pity wherever the troublemakers and bullies landed. I held up my glass and we clinked them. To personal security. Would that we all could have some. I just mouthed my rum. It was too close to 6 o'clock to put other forms of alcohol into my system.
You know, Padma, whenever the executive committee is kibitzing amongst ourselves, this comes up a lot. You in this hour of the day. Back when we were both ward chairs, I remember you kicking up a fuss because Ted Fantaggi wanted to have a meeting at 6. It almost came to blows.
It just wasn't a good time.
But it's never been a good time. I checked. You are always here at 6 o'clock, but for a few occasions like hurricanes and dealing with ghosts. Why the ritual, Padma?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
My mom was a canon. I grew up surrounded by bread and wine and all the stuff that transforms it. I know a ritual when I see it, Padma.
Is that why you came here? You got a bet with the rest of the executive committee about how I spend my time? Joke's on you. I've actually been running a pit fighting ring.
That's why I like you. Even when you're neck deep in bullshit, you make with the funny.
Madam President, why did you break into my home?
Because I have something that needs fixing. And you're the only one who can fix it.
If I had 100 yuan for every time someone's used that line on me, I could buy 2 distilleries.
Evan Rootsarian is going to destroy the world.
Evan Rootsarian got that way because you let him.
What?
I warned you and everyone else up and down the food chain that Sarian was, at best, full of shit whenever he talked about the struggle. You had every opportunity to stop him, to cut his funding, to get him tossed from Sal's reach. I told you and I told you, and you never listened to me. It took him trying to burn me and Wash and Banks alive before you all realized that you'd created a monster. He was ready to destroy billions of people, including our union brethren, right here, and you let him happen. Why in hell should I do anything to help you when you wouldn't listen to me when we could have done something? He's out of jail 48 years early and starting his empire of bullshit all over again. What the hell, Letty?
You are absolutely right about everything.
Now I wish you didn't have that jammer.
I'll be happy to say that again on the public when this is all over. You were at his church this afternoon. What did you see?
I told her about the food and clothes, about the busted people sitting around. He's right, isn't he? About the people slipping through the cracks.
Yes. We've had a breakdown in social services over the past 9 months.
How?
Because there's no longer enough money to convince everyone to keep working. We need 2.8 million yuan to keep everyone paid for a week, bennies and all. Right now, we're getting nothing.
Why?
Because of Vitai Blumbeck's black stripe.
What about it?
After the black stripe infected our cane, we had to torch a quarter of our fields to make sure it didn't spread. The big three weren't happy about that.
Who cares what they think?
We do, because they have since decided we aren't a reliable supplier.
We make enough for four other worlds, and that's in an off year.
We do, but we don't get paid like we used to.
But the contract...
got negated when the black stripe ripped through our fields. Those rates and goods we got from the big three were dependent on us raising healthy cane. We fought to make sure that we didn't have to rely on big three pesticides or herbicides, that we could grow cane our way. It's labor-intensive, but we have plenty of labor to draw from. When Blumbeck's black stripe got out, we voided our part of the contract. The big three cut us off, and rightly so.
I never thought I'd hear you take the big three's side.
Spare me the purity bullshit. We need the big three's tech and their money to live the way we want. Or do you want us driven back to the steam age? You know what kinds of horrible diseases people died from then? Remember when cancer was still fatal?
No.
No. Because we live in a time and place where medicine has eradicated all that. You and I and everyone on this planet will live a good long time, provided we don't starve. People need to eat, and we need to pay people to grow food, and that money comes from the big three, because it's the only currency they'll accept. And we get that money by selling our cane, which we are not providing enough of. It's circular and ugly, but it's the system we have, and it means none of us are indentured to the big three anymore.
I touched the ink on my cheek. Us?
You really gonna give me shit because I've never had needles jab my face?
Maybe a little.
You know, the fanatics in the Freeborn Organizing Committee thought that was a sure sign of dehumanization, getting stamped like cattle.
Do you?
I always thought the FOC were loons. And worthless, too. All that babbling about changing the world, and all they did was blow up a post office and make the rest of us look like terrorists. No, I'm union, Padma. I know the weird balance we have with the big three. We may depend on their cash, but they don't directly control us. If some mid-level director in Thronehill issues a memo saying everyone has to start buying twice as much Tasty Choice caffeine lubricant, we don't have to follow along.
Especially since Tasty Choice tastes like crap.
Exactly. I know our relationship with the big three isn't perfect, but it means we get to live our lives.
Except when it doesn't.
And now is one of those times.
Why hasn't Wawa certified the cane for export, Letty?
Because that magical pool of labor that allows us to grow cane by hand is vanishing. Wawa knows it. People are leaving the kampong, and the fields are going fallow. That's why I need your help.
To do what?
To stop Evan Rootsarian.
No.
I'll forgive your debt.
I beg your pardon?
You are on the hook for blowing up the lifter. You will be in debt for the rest of your life. And the only position open to you is one where you put on a leaky environment suit and wade through filth for 10 hours a day. Do you really want to do that for the next 80 years?
I could always get another job.
Not if I have anything to do with it.
Madam President, are you threatening to infringe on my right to be professionally mobile?
I've always thought that threats happen before the action. Once the action's been taken, words don't matter as much.
Well, there's always the possibility that old Windswept becomes the hot ticket item among the body corporate. I've been sending samples to Thronehill and getting some orders.
Your rum may be good, but I doubt it's 1 trillion yuan good.
Buy a case. You can find out for yourself.
I could buy 1 million cases and you'd still be in debt for what you did.
What I did saved Occupied Space's population from getting thrown back into the Stone Age.
Please. Late information age at the worst.
Cancer would still have gone back to being fatal. Same difference.
Are you really that proud? You'd rather spend the rest of your life in the bottom of the plant than do this for me?
You want a strong arm, Sarian? I went to the door and flung it open. The woman with the perfect skin spun around, her hands up and ready to hit. I pointed at her. Get her to go down to his crappy little church. Have her break his thumbs. I don't do anyone's dirty work, no matter what they're offering.
I really like this chair.
Yours isn't comfy enough?
Every time I'm in my chair, people yell at me to make their lives better. Gets unpleasant after a while.
Then you should try another gig. I know one in the plant that can be filled immediately. You'd be great at it, seeing how well you shovel shit. Letty didn't look at me as she breezed past.
That church isn't the only one that Sarian has. You think a man as ambitious as Evan Root Sarian would limit himself to Hawks Street?
So he's franchising.
Ask around. You think you're the only employer losing people?
There's nothing in the charter stopping him.
No. But what he's doing is going to tear the charter into tiny, tiny pieces. You were there. You heard his sermon.
I heard part of it.
You heard the bit about the strike.
How do you know? Are you hacking into my feed? Well, I never thought I'd see the day when the Prez herself became Big Brother. You'd better hope that jammer works, or I will bring you down so fast you'll get the bends.
Padma, I'm asking you to do this because you're the perfect candidate for this gig. You're stuck in the worst job in Brushhead, and you have a history with him. He's acting contrite as hell, so he might be willing to bring you in.
Why would he do that?
To prove he's changed. I don't know what's motivating him to start this strike, but I can see that he's going after it with the same fervor he had when he was in the union. He only got out 3 months ago, and he's already got 800 people following him. It's just a matter of time before he's back to his old tricks.
Then talk to the parole committee. If you could screw up my life so easily, putting him back in prison should be a cinch.
It doesn't work like that. I can't override that decision. Checks and balances.
Oh, so you can violate my buffers, keep me in my job, and break into my home, but you can't do anything to him? You need to find some better checks.
Or you could take me up on my offer. I know you pay a ridiculously low rent for this place. I'm pretty sure if your landlady filed a complaint with the housing committee, that she'd be able to charge market rates.
I think it's really cute how you're being so tough with me, but you couldn't have been like that with Sarian. Oh, did I say cute? I meant go fuck yourself.